Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Wave your hands high.
Don't stop.
Wave your hands high.
All right, welcome to another episode of NTX MF. That's North Texas Music Fanatics. This time I am joined by an old friend. I'll let him kind of go into his history because it's pretty long. We got Casey Hess.
Hello. My name is Casey Hess. I'm a Dallas musician. I started Dusu, Jump Rope Girls, joined Burden Brothers, started Descender.
Descender, yes. That's exactly why I wanted you to list it off, because you've been in so many things. And right before we started, I was like, oh yeah, we're going to talk about this band and this band and this band and this band, all these bands you've been in. There's been so many. I forgot about Descender. Who else? I mean, you're doing solo stuff.
Yes. You know, one that kind of flies under the radar that I think was an absolute blast, and maybe it was just too much of a firecracker, was a band that Clay Stinnett, who's a phenomenal local artist from Oak Cliff, and also a phenomenal drummer, and Gabe Cardinale from Dead Twins and a band called Maroon that Dusu befriended. Gabe became a close, dear friend of mine. I think he lives in Manhattan now. We started a band called Blood Saints, and it was the three of us, and we had one show at Double Wide. That's it. And then we broke up.
I had not heard of that one, so that's obviously a little more obscure than some of the others. But I have, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard of Dusu and Burden Brothers.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of that. I mean, you and I first met, I'm guessing it probably would have been when I was photographing Fry Street Fair, and we had some friends in common, and I got pictures of you doing your crazy back bend yoga stuff. The way you are on stage, I've got this term, I call it my soul animal. It's a cross between a soul brother and spirit animal. And what you do on stage is my inner soul animal. That's what I feel when I'm photographing bands, is what you're actually making happen. Let's talk about those early. Was Dusu your first real band? What did you have a couple bands before that? Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's a high honor. That you just made my day there. Soul animal. Wicked. I wasn't musically trained when I was a kid. I sort of just discovered that I could play guitar. I was a kid. I wasn't really good at anything. I did like voices. I was terrible at school. When music came around, I think there was a guitar. And I think at around like 13, I was really into U2 and Guns N' Roses and Susie and the Banshees and just it with soundtracks, these obscure, just weirdo records. And I started learning the guitar and I just took to it. Everything changed. I around that time I had health problems, like rheumatic heart disease, and so it was like lived in a hospital for a little bit and like no vigorous activity. So like that'll kind of mess with a little kid's psyche. So music for me it changed everything. Anything breakdancing, like Run DMC, like it was.
Well, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because how do you go from no vigorous activities to basically being the rock and roll breakdancer that you are on stage?
I am high risk everything. When music started happening, I was obsessed with it. There was like, even sleeping was annoying. School most definitely was. Every type of music and just like reading Anne Rice and poetry of Bukowski and Khalil Gibran, all of that. Like I was just a little weird handicapped sponge, and it just breathed like a vigorous life into me that's even talking about it now, it recharges me. Music really just, it's almost like the force, you know, like, yeah, like that kid's not supposed to do that, or oh, what a, no. But there's a lot of things out there, especially sonically, that can unlock parts of yourself that if you have the courage to take the ball and run with it, then maybe you're on your path.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. So let's put you now in starting Dusu. My interaction with the band, obviously, I first saw them when I was photographing at Fry Street. We later had done some, I think we did an interview for Harder Beat magazine at one point.
That's right.
I did one of your band promo photos. You remember when we went downtown? It's a very classic 90s style picture where the band is kind of still and you got all the blur all around them.
That was fantastic, by the way. That's still one of my favorite ones, man. We played a show with Chomsky the night before at Trees, and we were all so hungover. Don't drink. You have no idea how hungover we were. I think Chad Diatley, our bassist, and probably my best friend in the whole world, he and I both ice cream cones. I remember that it was 30 cents a cone. And that's...
Oh, yeah, because we were right across the street from the McDonald's that is over there by the Greyhound station.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and this was back before it was digital and easily carried battery-powered lights and everything, and we had to set up and kind of take up the whole sidewalk just to make that happen, I remember.
Yeah, you were a champion, and I remember, it might have been a Sunday, and I remember that area still being crazy congested, and that was, what, early 2000s? It's nuts now.
Yeah, yeah, I think probably like 2001, 2002, something like that. Yeah, so
okay. I think I threw up that night too. Anyway,
well, so let's talk about the band Dusu. You all shared the stage with plenty of other great bands. You had quite a following. I mean, what do you want to say about that band?
With music and guitar, it was the first time in my life where I found purpose and something that I was good at. It felt like a world different than this one, like a truer one. I can't explain it. I was good at something. I was a handicap. There was something magical about it and true. And so at the Colony High School, I lived in Carrollton. I went to the Colony High School. We were on that side of the tracks. There were very few musicians, very few rock musicians. Then Mark Spitzer from Dusu, I guess this was 89, 90, before phones, and he passed me a note. He was like a metalhead. I was a weirdo, and combat boots and a Smith shirt, and loved The Cure. And he passed me a note, and he's like, I heard you're cool. You can play Crazy Train. Do you want to be in a band? And I'm like, totally. And that's how Dusu started. Then this guy named Eric Shutt, he was a grade older. He was, I think, a senior when I was a junior. And he played guitar. And I went over to his place and we jammed and we were just sort of unanimous. Like, we loved Fugazi and punk rock, and we would sneak out and go see punk bands at Slip Disc and Easy Street Theater, etc. And this was like a dream come true to play these places. Like, Dusu's first legitimate show was Easy Street Theater. It was June 7th. I think it was 1992. But we would sneak out and see these bands from all over the country, and we're blown away. Like, everything smelled terrible most of the time. Like, these shows got interrupted by law enforcement. Anything goes. It was so wheels off, and I was completely in love with it. Like I was like, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life, man. And there wasn't a whole lot to do in the Colony, and there wasn't a whole lot to do in Carrollton except for like just start shit. Be troublesome.
I remember that time. My friend and I, we lived in Dallas, and he had a girlfriend in the Colony. And driving from Dallas to the Colony, it was like driving through. It felt like 8 hours of nothing.
Yeah. 544, 121.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Man, at the time, I had the 76 Plymouth Duster stick shift. And I'm saying that because, like, it was, we called it the Sea Dragon. It was this, like, awesome powder blue. The clutch was totally messed up, and so it's a very hilly area, and there were so many times where it would just stall, and we would just be hitting reverse. And I'm doing everything I can at that point to like find an identity to what I am. It was completely, I don't know if you remember this, but it was completely, totally unacceptable. This was like right before Nirvana hit. to wear like skids and like skate outfit stuff at the same time, combat boots and maybe like leggings, like trying to look like the Cure in Jane's Addiction that fell downstairs, and like these hilly terrains. Really, I think probably has a lot to do with how honestly early Dusu sounded, right? Like just staring out the window, you know, driving and listening to everything from like Garage Days from Metallica to rare Susie and the Banshees stuff to Wax Track stuff, and that is when my entire life changed, when I heard Course of Empire for the first time. Like right now I'm moved how it felt like they were there to like change the world, like U2 was, you know, like it, how Mike Graff's guitar sounded and like Vaughn Stevenson and like the two drums, like blowing my freaking mind, man. And Corey, my buddy, I'm trailing off here, during that time, cassette tapes and those travels to the colony from Carrollton, like just these hilly areas where it was such a wonderful time looking back to discover yourself as a teenager, you know, like an awkward handicapped teenager and be like, maybe I'm fucking good at something, you know, like, and the punk rock attitude of like, let's just do it. Let's put a show on in a box truck. Let's put a show on in parking lots and, you know, like regardless. And, that purpose like changed everything, but man, yeah. Just I'm totally going to listen to Course of Empire now.
Well, I think what we need to do, normally with the show is we talk, we play a song. But I think what you just said, I think we have to play a Dusu song followed by a Course of Empire song, just so we can see that comparison and how the two, you know, kind of interact.
Sure.
What song would you like to hear from Dusu?
What song would you like to hear?
You know, I like a lot of them, but I've always been absolutely in love with, you've got that that instrumental track.
Who's it going to be?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so we'll do that and then some Course of Empire and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed those songs. I know we did. I think it would be a good idea to discuss where you went after Dusu, which was something pretty darn amazing. I mean, you started playing in Burden Brothers. Why don't you talk about that for a little bit? Tell us what Burden Brothers was for people who might not be familiar with it and its Toadies lineage.
It would be a pleasure. So I guess in 2003, man, I got to say I was really down on my luck. I owed a lot of money. I was Chapter 7 touring. On your own can take a toll. I was waiting tables. Chad DeAtley from Dusu was bartending. We were working at a restaurant on Greenville Avenue, and he was he was about to be a new dad, so we didn't really know what was going to happen with Dusu.
Well, the whole band, I guess, was kind of in flux at that point, because I know I shot 2 Dusu weddings. I know people, you know, like Chad and Brandy were starting to have kids. All sorts of stuff was starting to happen. And yeah. So, I mean, was that kind of a catalyst for Dusu finishing and everyone moving on to new things?
Yes. I think it was a really, really tough growing pain for the four of us. And we all quietly knew that it was so necessary. I think Dusu music sort of portrays how we communicate within the four of us. It's complicated, but there's a lot of respect and love. Eric was starting a band. I was doing some side project stuff. Todd was just, you know, a total solid badass for all of us. He and I were living together, roommates in Carrollton. And then Corey Rosani came into the restaurant that I was working at and said, "Hey, we need a guitarist. You might be the guy because you have a touring experience, and we have some." Turns out we have radio hits. I'm in this band called Burden Brothers with Casey Orr from Gwar and Taz Bentley from Reverend Horton Heat, and of course Vaden Todd Lewis from the Toadies.
So it's basically like a Texas supergroup in a way.
No doubt. I'm not kidding. That afternoon, when I got off of my shift, I got a message from Vaden, and I showed up to audition, and I didn't know any of the music. I just I ad-libbed. I just rolled with a song called "Do for Me." It was in E, and they were like, Taz was like, you're in the band, and so we just started pounding Miller Lights, and he's like, I want this to be sort of like a Thin Lizzy circa 78, and he's like, you have to know Taz, like he's this incredible man and like a force. So he's very
a force
tall.
Yeah, I was about to say he's a force physically too, because he's a big guy.
Yeah, and he puts his giant hand on my shoulder and he's like, just, you know, Thin Lizzy circa 78, and here's this, you know, here's an unreleased copy of Buried in Your Black Heart, and then all of our other stuff we did at Last Beat Records. And I felt like a 14-year-old, like the 14-year-old little rock and roller that just discovered electric guitar again, because I put those CDs on the jam box, and I started learning Buried in Your Black Heart, like start to finish, and everything that they gave me within about 3 days. And I jumped on a tour bus with them and started touring. And it was, I'll tell you, Jason, like it was, to this day, it was one of the coolest rock and roll experiences, because at a 28, like as 28 and just wondering what you're going to do with your life, this band comes out of nowhere that you're buds with and that you love all of them. Like I was reading about them, you know, like in Buddy magazine, you know, like in the back of my dad's car when we were like driving the half price books. And I was like, oh, someday maybe I'm going to be like this too. And these guys are like, hey, why don't you learn this song called Beautiful Night by ear, like Buried in Your Black Heart, you know, like Beautiful Night, Shadow, Your Fault, Goddamn Beautiful. Like for me, Dusu was like a different animal. Like it was a part of me physically, like it's just a part of me. And for once to be asked to take on like a dual guitar solo, which wasn't necessarily like the style of the times, I was thrilled, like losing my mind, just like so so beside myself that these guys just nonchalantly are like, hey, we're going to do this tour. You're in the band. We got hits on the radio. And I loved the music. It wasn't anything like eye rolling. Like, Your Fault, I think, is fucking gorgeous. Beautiful Night. Like, just the feedback of that. So that was the next step for me. I'm trailing off here. I'm just excited.
We want to hear feelings. We want to hear emotion. We want you to describe those outrageous back bends. And when I photographed Burton Brothers, I remember seeing you on stage, and I was like, this is what you are. I mean, I love Dusu, and especially the shows back at Fry Street, where just the entire environment was just electric. I mean, that was great. But seeing you on stage with Burden Brothers, it was a totally different thing. And you fit that.
Thank you. I'll tell you, I love talking about this too. Dusu is Dusu, you know, like we're just a little side quest here. Jeff Gruber from Local 63 at the time, and then now my Hess project and Descender, he's filling in for a guitar for Eric Shett doing some Dusu stuff. And he kind of summed up Dusu. He's like, it's the most functional, dysfunctional band I've ever known. And it sums it up. So to have Vaden and Taz and Casey Orr and Corey Brazzani welcome me with open arms, where I'm just learning stuff, and Taz going, bring it, be a showman, like, do solos. I know you don't do solos, but do solos. Like, they were so insanely encouraging all the while. Like, eye contact with Dusu on stage was a rarity, and it was, again, like, I'm not dissing that at all. Like, we're kind of like little badass Jedi over there. And then there's Burden Brothers, where we're covering, like, we're doing ballads and Thin Lizzy-ish stuff, and a song so powerful for me, like Shadow, and then Dirty Sanchez, which is, like, so wicked awesome, Wheels Off. I totally miss playing that live. And then I'd look over to Taz if I messed something up, and he would just be laughing. Like, it wouldn't be, like, this disappointed, like, oh, I guess it. And that was a first in my entire music experience, was just like, oh, no shit. Taz and I got this freaking connection, and like everyone in the band had this arena rock connection. And the first show that I played, we played San Antonio, and they were still building the stage. And Ben Burt from Brutal Juice was drum teching for Taz, and I'm just sitting there like, oh man, this is 15 songs I might have learned in like a few days. I'm like, all right, well, let's do this. And, you know, it kind of feels weird that, you know, kind of like going on a date, like kind of going on a date when you have a girlfriend, like, oh, this is for someone else. Like, we hit the venue with the Burden Brothers. And then Taz immediately looks at a manager, and he's like, we need a bucket of beers. and then we killed it. So
I think that kind of sums up that band in a way, because they all were masters of their craft enough that they could kind of just cruise in and rock the house, right?
Absolutely. For instance, one of the cool things is Vaden's looking over at me. I think it was in Los Angeles, maybe Spaceland, 2003, and we're cheering, and he looks over at me and goes, it's 2003. And we're watching Taz Bentley play a drum solo. And, like, we just kind of, like, click our beers. Those guys were so encouraging with me doing anything on stage that I'm not kidding. Like, I keep using the term Jedi. But they were so encouraging with, like, the force of music to where, and I wasn't necessarily tethered with vocals, that they really did push for me to do whatever. I remember times where I was like jumping over any and everything to land on the drum riser and rock out with Taz, and then like bending over backwards as Vaden is like creeping with his guitar during Do For Me, and like pushing and like seeing how low I can go, sort of limbo style. There was one time I think in Missouri where during Dirty Sanchez I was, and all the while we're like dolled up in guy liner and nail polish, and like, I, you know, like Taz was adamant, like, you remind me of Izzy Stradlin, and I love him, and you should wear a scarf. And I'm like, can do, totally. Like, it was so much tongue in cheek, but so serious too. Like, where you're that cocksure and like confident, and you're with that kind of crew where it's like you can do anything, you know. And that,
yeah,
I love that.
I think the beauty of it is that everyone, well, except for maybe not regarding Gwar, but everyone else was trying to shun. Maybe shun's not the right word.
No, I think I know, you know, exactly where you're going. The '90s.
Yeah, see, you've got this really played down. I'm wearing a t-shirt, maybe a flannel at most, and I'm out here rocking. And so they take it a next level up to do something different. And I mean, you can't say that with Gwar, because you can't get more. He's dialing back, but everyone else is taking it to another level.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, I'll say this so many times, like, so many times we would be outside of a gas station and I see this awesome, like, funniest man ever, Casey Orr, with guyliner barely on, with like awesome rose pearl snap, and he's patting me on the shoulder and he's like, this is the first time that I've ever had to just show off as a musician and be like, just have fun, like, just be a rock and roller instead of like a character or like rigor mortis. And for me, it was pun intended, liberating for all of us, because in the '90s we all had these unique jobs. Like, for instance, I was trained as a frontman to go straight into the next song. Like tuning with Dusu, we never really had crew too much. So tuning for us was always like hyper stressful, because we were animate, so our guitars would go out of tune all the time. So we were always just trying to engage the audience while we were just trying to get our drop D on point and then go into the next song. And then with Burden Brothers, it was like a show and fun, you know. Like, it was one of the first, I think it was the first show that we did in Austin at Stubbs, and Dusu had played Stubbs several times, and we're all just hanging out again. Like, I think I might have been in the band maybe 3-4 weeks, and it's a sold out show. Like, it's outside and, like, you know, just maybe a radio show, and we're all just drinking beer, and Vaden and Taz look over at me and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, huh? I'm like, start the show. And so someone hands me my hollow body, like the Gibson Epiphone Sheridan 2, and I put it on and I walk across the stage and I just like do this like triumphant like fist, like just like staring at the audience, you know, total fight or flight kind of thing. 2,000 people just erupt, and then I cut into like, come on down, like, it sounds way cooler than that. And there's Taz Bentley, like grinning ear to ear, like just gun, like, and then that's when we started clicking in with like, come on down, like, oh, we're setting the mood, like, he and I. And so I just immediately jumped on the drum riser and like just playing off of one another, and like, you know, just like during that, like, come on all you angels, there were times where I was so like full of like life and like the force or whatever you want to call it, like so invigorated in the power of music and like the connection with people that, and I never did yoga before this stuff, like Dusu was sort of like yoga for me. I bent over backwards just staring at Taz, and we're both like just making stupid faces at, like, you know, sticking our tongues out or winking or whatever, and while Vaden's like, come on all you angels, and I'm jigga 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 jigga, and it summed up, like, this is what life's all about. Like, there you go.
Well, I think maybe we ought to play some Burden Brothers now, so let me go ahead and hit play.
Out.
So we just heard something from Burden Brothers. I think it's pretty amazing that you became friends with people like Vaden and Taz. And you've got a lot of friends. We've been friends for a long time. I know you've always been a real sincere, easy person to talk to. I remember once I was going through a breakup and you came and met me at the landing and we just talked and you made me feel at ease. And everyone that I see around you, they seem to get that same feeling. Even though you're so animated and wild and crazy on stage, everyone around you seems to be so at ease with you. So I think that says a lot about you. And it amazes me how many people you can count as friends. I mean, tell me about some of your friends here in the Dallas scene, because you know a lot of people.
Thanks for that. That was very sweet. It was, however this may come across, but it's easy to fall in love with a moment with someone. Like just how they talk, where their eyes go, where you're at, the moment, where they're at, where you're at. How it's, for me, breathtaking. And Deep Ellum was certainly like such a versatile and powerful and unapologetic and relentless place in the 90s for a lot of us to meet.
Well, in the way you put it, there were a lot of people to fall in love with in Deep Ellum. I've met so many great people down there over the years. It seems to be a magnet for interesting people.
Yeah, and strays and being a wallflower, and like just I think all of us were wallflowers just watching someone walk across a club or a restaurant or having coffee at a cafe or just walking down the street. It was a way to either like wave something off or completely be in wonder with a moment and like just capture that. I'm really happy that there's so many of us that experienced that. At the same time, what am I trying to say? Like I remember seeing Vaden for the first time, Todd Lewis for the first time, walk across Galaxy Club when I think Dusu was opening for the Toadies at Galaxy Club. Maybe I was like 18, maybe 19. But I remember like him being so many Observer articles, and like there was the spotlight was on him, and he was so awkward and.
Well, he's a quiet guy.
Yeah, and then like I remember looking at this guy going like, man, I don't feel so alone. Totally. And then the more I got to know this guy, like we have a lot in common, and he is fucking hilarious, by the way. So is Taz. Well, pretty much all, just about everyone, Burden Brothers. You know, I love that part of Deep Ellum in the 90s is everyone sort of staring at one another from afar going, what the fuck's up with this? And then just happenstance, whether you're, you know, at an art gallery or some loft or you're drunk and someone like picks you up to help take you home. Like, There was a lot of really, really like story moments.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we kind of all knew each other because I would run into Tony in the parking lot at Trees.
Yeah,
I'd run into Sweet Scott Tony. At Trees. I'd run into Frank at Kettle, and I mean, we all knew each other, and we knew that we were putting together something that. I mean, without sounding too romantic and dramatic, we were kind of saving souls in a way, because there were people who were beat down and they were coming out of Deep Ellum and just forget about stuff for a while and just enjoy some amazing music and friendships. What other bands, what were the bands that you were going down there and seeing and that you were anxious to see and that you had friends that were like, hey, you got to come down and check out my new thing?
It's no secret that I was absolutely obsessed with Course of Empire. Everything about Course of Empire was like where I wanted to be as a person, as a spirit. And then getting to know them, and then there was like this romantic, beautiful perfection of Pop Poppins, like just like Jerome and Bill, just Bruce, like. All of it was like we were lucky, like we were like in Dallas, like there's movies about that time in the 90s, like that, but it was romantic and beautiful. And like when I hear, when I'm just thinking of, like, it's been years since I've heard Sabrina, like, just listen, like Sabrina, like that title, like I heard the demo of Sabrina, and I would sneak out with my buddy Corey to go watch them at Dave's Pawn Shop with Jerome playing, and I'm like 15, like about as long hair awkward as you can be, and I'm hearing Bruce, and I'm hearing these music, like I'm seeing everyone just sort of nonchalantly, like just like, and everyone's, it's an act because Pop Poppins was miraculous. Everyone's just nonchalantly, like, you know, like listening or walking past all the, like, I love the romanticism of those 90s moments where we all had our guard up, but at the same time we all had this peripheral of like, I am totally about this, or I just, like, you couldn't let your guard down, you just wanted to be cool and mysterious like these people, instead of being awkward. But you, but then when you get to know these people, they're so awkward they don't even know how to talk to you, and then you just feel this super connection. And for me, it was I guess maybe because of the health stuff, like it was just the courageous bravery of if I adored Jerome's drum playing or Bruce's singing, immediately I would just go, you're totally awesome. Or you know, the transvestite door person at Industry, you know, where it's like, you like you're 7 foot tall and you totally look like Jane, like a Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction. Like, for me, it was getting to know these people, like it because life is breathtaking. Like, people are fucking cool as shit, and sometimes you just need to be the one to go, I really dig your earrings, or that song made me cry like 5 times. Like, you know, just something like that. Or, I like talking. I don't get out much.
I get exactly where you're going with that. I always thought, and especially when you mentioned movies of the 90s, and I mean, you've got movies that captured kind of the grunge scene, and you've got movies that captured, you know, kind of the LA scene. And I always thought, if somebody were to put out a movie that kind of encapsulated what that 90s Deep Ellum was like, it would be another Singles, it would be another Empire Records, it would be another, you know,
it would be such a fucking hit. Seriously, it's worth getting the sights and smells and reality and like just the crippling vibe of it. I remember meeting Mike Graff for the first time. It blew my mind. Like I can't believe that we're buds. Like it's like knowing Jimmy Page. I can't believe it's so, this is so fucking cool. I can't believe, and you shot my wedding. That's you. I love you. I can't believe that Todd Pipes from Deep Blue Something mastered my solo record. You know, like watching Taz Bentley play a drum solo with Reverend Horton Heat opening for Porno for Pyros at Bomb Factory, when I'm trying to like dodge, like, because it was a jagged like bar then, like you might hit your head on something that would actually like split it open. That now, like, he and I are like, he was in my wedding. He has talked me, you know, off the cliff. Like I'm moved at this story of Deep Ellum and these artists and just everyone that fell in love with it. Like it needs to be heard. I would totally, it's on the radar.
Yeah.
I like talking.
That's okay. The beauty of this, it's an open format show. It's two friends talking. So regardless of whether you answer a single question that I ask, it doesn't matter.
I like waffles a lot.
There you go.
Was that the question?
The question was about friendships. And I mean, you even mentioned it when I photographed your wedding, you had all these like huge names in the Dallas music scene there as your friends, as your best man, that people respect you because of the artist that you are. And I think ultimately my question was, tell me a little bit about some of these people in the scene that they, you respect. Okay. And you know, so we've discussed a lot of the 90s. Who right now, who is on stage that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that I've been able to see this person, or I can't believe that I know this person when they're doing all this amazing stuff?
Oh, that's easy. There are so many exciting artists out there. Son of Stan, Deep Red, Rose Garden Funeral Party, Van Damme, Jade Nicole, just phenomenal, super, super inspiring. Secrecies, I think they're releasing their second album. Laura Lee Kay.
What made you decide to go solo, I guess, is a good question, because you've always been part of these great groups. So what puts you there as you?
It was, for me, it was time to take that on. I devoted my adult life to being a part of something, all for one, one for all, that kind of thing. And sometimes that happened, sometimes it didn't. And I'm so proud of the music that I got to be a part of. But there's always been a drive with me to put something out. I kind of take music on and life on with a whole lot of like, why not? Why not? I wanted to put a solo record out. I think I'm just getting started. And with this solo thing, it's just another like expansion of my music. And it, you know, it was right before COVID that I was taking this on with Jordan Richardson and then Taylor Tatch and then Todd Pipes. And I was writing most of this stuff myself. And then Dustin Fleming from the Vandaliers now, and from a Trebuchet, an old Dusu fan, wrote some tunes and gave them to me, and it was a first for me, and I was blown away at how much fun being a solo artist can be, and then I play with Aaron Lyons from Slow Roosevelt, who is a telepathic drummer with me. Like, even when we're jamming, like, I'm just cracking up at how we should have been doing this years ago when Dusu and Slow Roosevelt were sharing the stage together. Then Duncan Black and the great dark badassness of Zach Busby, like the man of bass. Fatima Thomas, who's now in Flickerstick too, and then the mighty Jeff Gruber, who's pretty much been my like wild card and ace in the hole like this entire time. Like, the solo record for me was something that just had to happen. Everything that they do is inspiring my music as well. So, yeah, if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think so. I think what we should do is we should kick into one of your songs so that the listeners can kind of follow along with that. So let's go ahead and play something right now. Thank you. All right, that wasn't too bad at all. I think we should finish things talking about, I mean, because we started off talking about all these amazing musicians that you played with and do so. Then we talked about these otherworldly musicians that you played with in Burden Brothers. Now you're working with, I mean, some of the names you named off with your solo project are just unbelievable. You're working with royalty here. And I think it would be interesting to kind of finish up and talk about some other projects you've worked on. I know you had a side project a while back. Let's hear about that.
When I was getting to know the Dallas rock and roll community, of course, you know, Dusu was the priority, but I really wanted to do like a collaboration, sort of collective thing, kind of like Wax Trax, like, you know, like Killing Joke, and then Skinny Puppy, and Ministry, and Nine Inch Nails, like all, like,
well, yeah, this. it's much more in that vein. I was surprised when I first heard it, because I received it, I think, from Irv back when I was doing reviews for Harder Beat. This was a long time ago, and I remember thinking, wow, this is not Dusu.
I wanted, originally, I wanted to keep Dusu kicking, but I wanted like this sort of side project, sort of collective, and, you know, have something like Todd Harwell on drums, and then Mike Graff comes in and does this, and then maybe, you know, half of Kalk is in half of this song, and then maybe the guys from Valve, like, et cetera, et cetera. For me, it was sort of like a response to, like, you know, Dusu is like Bleeding Day from Dusu, I think, is one of the heaviest, smartest, like, middle fingers. So like, we were always very comfortable with our, like, heavy masculinity, like, heaviness. So, like, sort of as a tongue-in-cheek, like, I thought, like, it would be great to have something called Jump Rope Girls.
I remember receiving the CD, and I remember thinking, this all-black cover with this little devil jump rope girl on it, and this very electronic meets fuzz, and it was something that I wasn't experiencing in Dallas at the time. It was just something so different. And I mean, you can look back now and you can listen to it and you can be like, well, this makes sense, because there were other parts of the world that were kind of grabbing onto the same ideas.
Absolutely.
I think maybe I wasn't smart enough back then, because I looked at it and I was like, wow, this is just something. But now I look at it, I'm like, you know, God, I'm glad this happened. I'm glad this got recorded. Well, I think we should let the listeners listen to it and decide for themselves. So I'm gonna finish this out. We're gonna say our goodbyes, and we're gonna hear some Jump Rope Girls. So I appreciate you being on. It's been great. I've known you for a long time. We've done a lot of stuff together. I don't think I could have had a better evening talking to anybody. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Me too. This was I'm very grateful. I don't know what to say. I agree. There you go.
Perfect.
you're awesome, Jason Janik. You're a gift to a lot of us over the years. So thank you for caring about back in the day, because it was pretty special.
Yeah, I hear you. So let's hear some of your music.
All right.
Thank you, everyone. Come back for the next episode. Bye.
This town.